You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything. Feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. And live with all your faults. I wanna wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so why don't you smile?
9:05, which means that this show's on time, which never really happens. Joining me from Georgia is Alex Hollings. Alex, what's going on? Long time no talk. Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad, man. It's been a crazy month. It's been a crazy couple of months, but I'm happy to be back in the Batcave and at my own desk for a change. You know, it makes work way easier when I just feel like I'm in a comfortable environment.
Oh, really? Do you feel comfortable? Do you have any, like, herbals, like, burning and shit?
Well, herbals burning as in, like, I've got 4 cups of coffee and 3 empty Red Bull cans.
That's not what I'm talking. Those aren't herbals, bro.
Yeah. I mean, coffee beans are a plant, at least, right?
I guess they could be herbals, yes.
I'm not a big, you know, my mom has been a nurse her entire life, you know? And she just recently started buying into this, what are these, essential oils?
Oh, my God.
Ah, come on, man. Like, you're too smart for this, Mom. You know, like, she's like, oh, you really ought to try putting this, I don't know what you use with essential oils for. Do you rub them in your hair?
No, you burn them.
Whatever it is you do with them, it's done.
No, they're scented, though.
Oh, well, maybe. I could see a scent being relaxing, I suppose, right?
Come on, I could see that. Come on, man.
It's not for me.
If we just light it on fire and smell it, we'll all feel so much better. And then if we join hands and think positive thoughts, maybe that fucker Trump will die.
I gotta tell you, what is it about our species and just thinking that lighting shit on fire and breathing it in is a good idea?
I don't know.
It's like,
you find it
everywhere.
I don't know, but that's what the essential oil people, they're the same people you find doing yoga, right? They're the same people that you find at all those kind of events, and God bless them. I mean, I love them, and I look at them like I look at, like, an orangutan when I go to the zoo, like, what is that? Like, that's,
well,
like,
this is what I mean about, like, why on earth my
exotic
mom, who's got, you know, 40 years experience in the healthcare field,
yes,
you know, who works as a director of nurses, you know, she's in charge of nurses, and she's like, oh, witchcraft, let's try some witchcraft.
Mom, why don't you get some snake oil while you're there?
You know, we're moving backwards. We're not moving forwards here. We've got more and more people buying supplements because the package says that it'll add years to your life, when in reality you're just buying poison and hay fill. And we've got other people just lighting shit on fire, thinking that'll help.
But here's what's wonderful about it. So what's truly wonderful about it is that those people that put out those products, they're not, if you're looking for an FDA-approved label on it, it will be nowhere near the packaging.
Nope, not
okay?
going to find it. No FDA oversight over supplements.
And that's why they exist. That's right.
I shit you not. At an earlier stage in my life, I actually, when I first was getting out of the Marine Corps, I was working as a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And for a little while there, I was like, I'm going to start my own supplement company. You could literally put anything you want in a pill. Tell people it does anything you want, and then sell it, and there's actually nothing that you're doing that's illegal. It's completely legal for me to fill pills with corn flour and then tell you it'll give you muscles. It's 100% legal to sell that shit. And that's the reason why the supplement industry is such a huge industry, you know, because, there, like you said, there's no FDA oversight. You can put whatever you want in it. That's why all of these companies say that they've got, you know, with their special recipe that they're not going to reveal to you, that'll just help make you strong.
It's kind of like Colonel Sanders' 11 herbs and spices. Nobody knows what it is, but we all know it's good.
Coca-Cola's secret recipe too, right? Like, guess what? It's sugar.
Caramel.
It's good marketing, though. It's good marketing.
Your mother. Your mother.
come on, Mom. You know? No, here's the thing. We've all got superstitions, so I guess I shouldn't be that harsh. I'm definitely a superstitious guy.
You are.
But not when it comes
what's
to
your
stuff
big,
like...
What's your biggest superstition?
Oh, that's a tough one. During the football season, I go back and forth between... I'm a Bills fan, which means that none of my superstitions work.
Exactly. Right? Like, all of them don't work.
Yeah, it's a guaranteed we're going to win 6 games a year. We're not going to do any better.
Well,
than that.
That's not even the best part of the guarantee. It's guaranteed that when something bad needs to happen for you not to go to the playoffs, it will.
It will, you know. I think if I watch the Bills, they'll do better. Other years, I think if I don't watch the Bills, they'll do better. For some reason, it seems like they just continue to suck despite whatever I try to do.
So you believe in the cosmic force of athletics?
Yeah, I logically no, but I can tell you playing football in the Marine Corps is the only time I've ever really, really knelt down and prayed, which is ludicrous. Right? I mean, I've lost loved ones. I've been in bad situations. And in all of those situations, I'm always focused on what I can do to, you know, to manifest change. But I tell you what, when you're...
Wait,
like, manifest
change in the cosmic order by doing
manifest change in the real world, right? Okay. Like, so I'm always focused on what I can do with what I've got on hand to make things better, right? That's a mindset and an approach that I try to take every time the going gets rough, right? Yeah. What can I actually do right now? But when you play offense and you're down or you're up by 3 points and the other team is on your 3-yard line and all you can do is watch your defense, you know, try to make a goal line stand,
right.
There's not much else you can do but pray, I guess. It was the only. I mean we're talking
about God.
Games,
do
we're
you
not
think
regular season?
Okay,
but,
this is. I did not intend for this to go this way, but it has. So what the fuck?
Yeah.
Do you think God is up there listening and going, "Oh shit"? Hollings' defense needs to stop inside the 3, right, against 11th Marines. Let me dial that shit up.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I've even worried. I remember worrying at the time. Man, if everybody gets one, this is a real waste of mine. You know? We did, however, end up winning the championship that year. I think it's important to know.
Oh, maybe it worked. So when the randomness falls in your favor, you attribute it to...
to a higher power.
Whatever deity you worship. And
I hate to be that guy, but I feel like that really is kind of the basis of humanity's love affair with religion all along, right? Is when things pan out, we credit it to a higher power, but when things go bad, we take the blame, right? And fortunately, that time it worked out. So I suppose I'll say this, though. I'm not always sure that I believe in God. My wife's very religious. She really does believe.
Right.
And so I try my best to hedge my bets. Like, I try not to be offensive to God if he's listening.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. On the odd chance.
Because occasionally I've prayed in my life and I've been like, God, I know that you and I aren't really even sure if each other exists.
Well, he's sure.
If you're there.
He or she is sure that you exist. You're, on the other hand. Are struggling. Yeah. You're a skeptic.
I think that I'm a skeptic of the form of God that we most often get exposed to in American culture, I guess. I don't really believe in a higher power that's concerned about whether or not we get a goal line stand or a higher power that can help you get through tough times in your marriage. I have to assume, and this is just my own beliefs, and this is not obviously what I wanted to come here to talk about, but I have to assume that if there is a God out there and he's looking down, he's got a bigger scope than whether or not I'm just having a real tough Tuesday, you know? But who knows? Maybe not. If you know, that's why I say I try my best not to be offensive to any deity that may be out there,
right,
just in case they are the one that's out there.
You know what? Let me tell you. First of all, I was raised Catholic, right? So I grew up with the dogma of Catholicism, and it affects me to this day. And I like being Catholic. I like Notre Dame. I like my Catholic schools because I thought they were better. I thought I like going to Catholic church. But I'm caught, and people say, "Well, you can't be like that." I'm an a la carte Catholic. I believe that. Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, that will not be on the menu for me. I will not be ordering that. That and they're like, Mac, that's not, you can't do it like that. And
but
I
that's
said,
the best of us, man. That's
I said,
the way you should approach
I
all
said,
belief structures.
Who fucking says? Oh, God says. I said, no, God doesn't say that. Some guy on the ground said that. Okay? And other guys that fucked it all up. So, I, in the spirit of they, am, will make arbitrary decisions about my relationship with God. Okay? Now, I got taught, for instance, when I was a kid, we used to raise money in school, and there were milk cartons for some reason, for pagan babies. Right? And it was, I think it supported Catholic orphanages around the world, which is a good cause, and they do good things. So, but pagan babies can't go to heaven because they're not, they're pagans. Well,
see, this,
I
is,
know,
this is where I start to
right.
have problems, because a mass murderer can, if he repents.
Yeah, if he repents, like I was just a, God forgive me. Okay, you're in, pagan baby.
Charlie Manson and Hitler, are
right.
they repented and they get yeah. they get to go.
Yeah, one of my friends says, that's the beauty of Catholicism, Mac, don't you get it? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you can be the biggest shitbag you want, but if on your deathbed you repent and accept, you know, Jesus Christ as your Savior, in your heart, you'll go to heaven. He says,
see, this is actually, this is where my break with religion first came. Is years ago, I read this book called Misquoting Jesus, which is, it's a great read. It's by a guy who spent a good portion of his adult life working as a priest in the Catholic Church, as a linguist. So he eventually started looking for the earliest possible translations of the Bible, so that he could try to do a new translation based on the earliest versions of the Bible that we have. The earliest versions of the Bible that we have are actually hundreds of years newer than the first times that it was written. But basically what he was saying was a lot of the Bibles that we have in English are littered with mistranslations. Some of them are really simple ones that don't really matter. Some of them are kind of substantive. That's not to say that the gist isn't there, but basically what he said was the religion that you experience as a Christian or as a Catholic in the United States isn't identical to the same Catholicism that you might get or you might have seen in an earlier language, you know, or on a translation based on an earlier version of the Bible.
Right.
So while Christianity is universal amongst Christians, there are actually really big divergences within the Christian faith, just because of the way we translated the book.
Ooh.
And that was what started me down this road of wondering if people had any influence on how the Bible ended up being written, you know? And the Council of Nicaea, where they really decided which things would be considered part of the Bible.
And which would not.
You know? And,
right.
And at, it's one of those things where I go, I think there's a difference between a higher power and humanity's ability to manipulate things for our own benefit.
And, well, and I would say this, a higher power and, right, humanity's interpretation and inclusion of different things in what they believe that higher power, right, set
out
to
and
do,
not
or how they...
with nefarious intentions,
no,
right? Like,
no.
We can only really see things through our own perspective, right? So sometimes we unintentionally inject our own biases. Or
yeah,
our
but
own
most
beliefs,
of those,
right?
Most of those, like the Council of Nicaea, which the Nicene Creed came out of, right? You could look that up. But most of that comes with, they were political organizations within an institution, and they believe
you're 100%
certain,
right.
They believe certain things. And I remember one of the most interesting classes I took, my parents, when they divorced, right, they never spoke again after they separated, right?
That's rough. That's difficult.
They were like the Germans leaving Russia in 1944, right? Scorched earth.
I mean,
everything.
My parents did speak every once in a while just to scream obscenities at each other, so maybe you were in the better position. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. But, I mean, yeah, our family was like the center of it was like a smoking hole. And I read, and so I took, I wound up being 3 units short of a minor in theology at the University of San Diego because I would take these electives. I was looking for an answer to why would God do this to my family. So gradually I found them. All right, and I read existentialism and Sartre. You know, I took classes on modern Judaism, on what it is to be Lutheran, blah, blah, blah.
A very similar approach to religion, and I got to say, man, having been raised Catholic, see, I grew up with a Catholic dad and a Protestant mom, so there was always debate about religion in my house. But having been raised Catholic, I got to say, I really respect your willingness to do that.
Well, I was looking for an answer. I didn't get one.
But this says something about you and your willingness to look for the truth regardless of your belief.
Where it goes? Well, that's because I'm not stupid. Hello. So I have my own conception of God. Like, God's a cool dude hanging around up in heaven. He's kind of bored. He's set the universe in motion. Like, a guy who only works like 6 days in his life and rests on the seventh. I mean, come on, what's he doing like every day? So I have this conception of him, and he's in the form of a human. He's at a pool because he's God. He's hanging out, right? And he's got right because he's God hanging out at the pool. What would you have at the pool with you? You'd have, like, smoking hot chicks all over the place. So he has that. It's kind of like a party you see in a music video. So it's kind of like that. And he says, you know, I'm a little bored today. Let me fire some out in the universe. So he scoops up some dirt, right, and he fashions it, and he has one of the hot chicks blow on it because that's what they do in Vegas on dice. Poof! And he fires it out into the universe. Now, the question is, what kind of strings does he have on that contraption? So I read a book. I have this. So that's my idea. I call it the shake 'em and roll 'em theory. That we're out here, and he's up there to inspire us, but he does not have a spreadsheet on Hollings that says, "Oh, Mr. Douchebag, surfing porn late at night when he's supposed to be working. Let me have somebody set fire to his house in the backwoods of Georgia." He doesn't work like that, okay?
Wait a minute, Mac, is that what happened?
let me use a different example. McNamara cut somebody off on the 405.
People who may not be familiar don't know how close to home this is striking. You got me worried, Mac.
So let me use a different example. So McNamara cuts somebody off on the 405, then flips them off, and then gives them the "I'm going to slit your throat" look, right? You're dead, right? That?
Yeah.
Maybe not on the 405, maybe on the 5 between Stockton and Manteca someplace, theoretically. So then he parks his car in Stater Brothers. Now I'm going to have his car keyed, right? So I said, yeah, I don't think it works like that, man. I don't think God didn't do Hitler. God didn't do Pol Pot.
I agree.
So anyway, my friend, who's still one of my best friends, coaches football. We were roommates in college. Now he's a coach at San Diego State. He calls me. I think he was out working already in college. I was a senior, and I dropped him off in San Jose when I went to Sacramento to spend Christmas with my family. He called me and said, "Dude, your Shakeman Roland theory's in a book." I said, "What are you fucking talking about?" He said, "I just read the Shakeman Roland theory." And I said, "What book?" He said, "You got to read it. It's awesome. It's called When Bad Things Happen to Good People."
I'm familiar with the book.
And so I bought it. The book, I mean, essentially validated the Shakeman Roland theory. And the book, the story is a Jewish rabbi, Harold Kushner, is out, you know, he's a rabbi. He's a pastor. He does his thing. So he has a son and a daughter. The son has a genetic disease where you age very quickly, and he dies, I want to say, at the age of 13 or 14 as a 90-year-old man.
Oh, my God, like that Robin Williams movie that's so difficult to watch.
Right. And so he said, you know, now all the things that I had said to people, they said to me. And he reacts, like, violently emotionally to it. Like, the hardest steel goes to the hottest fire. There's a purpose in this. God needs them more than you do. Time heals all wounds. And he does what everybody who hears that shit after they go through something traumatic does, which is he rejects it and says, "Fuck that." And so then the rest of the book is about, you know, what if, you know, God didn't do this. God would. My son is a beautiful, innocent young man. And ultimately what the conclusion is this. God doesn't have a spreadsheet on you. Okay, that we would like to believe that, but it's not true. We would like to believe for the turbulence in our life that there's a purpose in this that God does it. But, right, what you know, Rabbi Kushner said was, you're a human being living in the human condition on a human planet called Earth. And you're subject to all the maladies that are associated with existence as a human and all the maladies that go with being a human being in a human body. God is up there to inspire you.
And you know, I can even take that line of thinking that step further and say, why would God go about establishing this incredibly elaborate system if not to allow us to live within it, right? If God came down and interfered on our behalf all the time, what would be the point of having established an entire universe that works mathematically? What would have been the point of establishing cause and effect, you know? I think that the idea that God is so personally interested in you, and again, this is, I feel offensive even saying it because I'm not a believer.
Be careful, people who believe strongly will be angry at me.
I
know,
this.
Because when the lightning bolt hits, he's not always accurate with it.
But it really does seem to me that if there is a God, and I'm happy to say that there is, he built this entire system for it to be self-governing, you know, and that was his intent. So the idea, although I will say, okay, so now I'll argue against my own point, because I do have a theory when it comes to miracles in some situations.
This is part of the instability that we love about, the mental instability that we love about Alex Holland.
Yes, right? I try my best to represent dichotomy in all things, right? I don't like it when people quickly discount the possibility of miracles just because they have an explanation, which is weird, because I don't know if I believe in God. But to me, it seems that if God's real and God built everything,
right,
he could operate within the confines of his own rule book when initiating change, right? So if God realizes that something isn't progressing as it should, he needs to act within the confines of his rule book. Otherwise, faith is no longer a thing. If we can prove God exists, then faith no longer exists. And faith, it seems, is an important part of this religious belief structure. So if God were to come down and be like, hey, guys, I'm God. I wanted to make sure Alex won his football game, so I just figured I'd step in real quick. All of a sudden, faith is no longer what we're doing.
And he crushes a running back on a sweep, and then he's like, I'm out, dude's late.
Now instead, people are doing what they're supposed to do because they know God's real, and therefore they know heaven and hell is real. Instead, we're supposed to have free will. And if God is real and comes down and tells us that, we can't have free will anymore. Because now everything we do is subject to this concern for future punishment or reward, right? So I think that if God were to manifest change in our world, he would operate within the confines of the system that he developed to make sure that he doesn't prove his own existence to us. Because as soon as he proves it, then everything's gone. Now we have a whole new system in place where all of us are just watching behind our shoulders because we know God's there.
Yeah, and then all the shitbags are going to show up at Mass. It's going to be awful.
Exactly.
Awful.
All of a sudden, you're not doing anything because you believe it's right or you believe it's good. All of a sudden, the biggest motivator in all of our lives will be knowing that this is a temporary stop on our way to either heaven or hell. Right? And then you don't have free will anymore. So I think that if God does exist out there, and like I said, I love the idea that he does, I think that it's just as important to the rule book he wrote that he doesn't come down and tell us he's here. You know?
Well, my weird digression. My biggest concern is that there is a judgment day, and my parents and grandparents are going to be there. My conception of this is like it's in an outdoor amphitheater. There's no seats, but there's grass everywhere. And that, I'm standing there in front of St. Peter. He drops a scroll, which bounces and then rolls, right? Because we're going to review my sins, right? And I'm standing there like, what? Like, I don't get, why the three rolls for just me? And then I look over and I see my mom and my dad, who still aren't speaking to each other, even in heaven. And then, should both of them get there? And then my grandmothers and my grandfathers are standing there, and I look at St. Peter and hey, isn't there a little bit of discretion in this phase of the induction ceremony? the last thing I need to hear from my grandmother over there is, Michael, how could you? You know, I don't need that. Could we? Is there a curtain here in heaven? I mean, come on.
One would have to assume, though, that grandma went through the same thing. right?
I don't know. That grandma had the same library that I've developed.
And her grandmother was like, how could you?
How could you? You know? Oh, my God. I don't care about my grandma. I only care about me.
Yeah, that's fair.
How does that get me?
My big fear is, and we've actually joked about this in my family before, that the rapture will come and we just won't know. Because nothing in my house will have changed. We'll just be sitting here watching Netflix, and the grocery store will be real empty. We'll think it's weird. But that's probably not true, though, because my sister-in-law is a saint. So she'd disappear, and the rest of us would be like, where the hell did Nikki go?
That would be our indication and warning that something was amiss.
Either Nikki finally got fed up and left so she wouldn't have to cook for us anymore, or there was a rapture.
Nice. I would recommend this to you in all seriousness. Things that I found extremely interesting, enlightening, and thought-provoking. If you've never taken a class entitled The Bible is History, find a great instructor and take a class about the Bible as a historical document. And I
would like to do that.
Oh, my God. Let me just tell you, you would love it because it was a mandatory class at the University of San Diego. The woman who taught it was actually a law professor. And it was interesting because her name is E. Jane Villa. She's still around, by the way. And she talked about the context. If you don't know who the Thessalonians are and what's going on in Thessalonia as Paul goes walking around Thessalonia, and then he writes letters after he leaves to the Thessalonians, then how do you understand, right, the epistle according to Paul?
I completely agree. I love this idea.
If you don't understand it, then you do crazy shit like produce stuff with Revelations and saying that really Revelations predicts the United States and China fighting in the desert of Armageddon over oil like 2,000 years ago, right? That's right. And you just to scare the shit out of little kids that go to that movie, okay?
As a more contemporary example, I feel the same way about people who call themselves constitutionalists but haven't read the Federalist Papers. You know?
you know what I love?
You lack all context as to when this document was written and the motivations behind it, but you feel as though you're an expert on it just because you read the document.
Oh, my God. So without the footnotes, I love to, I call this, my friends call it, like the velvet sludgehammer. And so you'll be in a discussion about stuff like that. And I did it to my daughter last night. She was ridiculing me because I can listen to the same song for hours.
Me too, actually. Yeah, absolutely.
So Catherine, who's a music snob, by the way, she goes, I don't know how you do that. So we're at dinner. Colleen just turned 16. So we celebrated her birthday last night. I'd been gone for the actual birthday. So we had dinner last night, blah, 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 blah. So I'm an Ed Sheeran fan. His latest album I love because it's kind of like a Carlos Santana album. Santana does not have a front man or a front woman that sings. So when he does an album, it's a very like diverse album because he has all these different people sing on it. It's really cool. So if you have varied tastes in music, Santana's an awesome choice because you hear that. Well, Ed Sheeran did kind of the same thing. So my daughter's ridiculing me. And she said, she's telling about how she doesn't.
I gotta tell you, I feel like she ought to be proud of you as a 16-year-old girl with a dad that likes Ed Sheeran. She should be pumped.
Are you kidding me? So it was just cannon fodder for her. So we're sitting there eating, and she looks at me, she goes, about how she doesn't understand it. I said, I get that you don't understand it, okay? But here's why I can listen to it. That song, when I do that, for some reason, is speaking to my soul. Okay, and the reason that you don't understand it is because you don't have a soul. So it's I dropped that like on her in conversational tone at dinner, and she stopped eating and she looked at me. My ex-wife is sitting across the table laughing. Colleen didn't understand it, and Catherine looks at me and says, "What the fuck?" And I said, oh, I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? I thought I was thinking it. And that's my disclaimer when I do something like that. And so, it's called the Velvet Dagger. In professional circles, I'll listen to somebody and I say, no, it's not a bad point. But But, I mean, I just think because you don't really understand the footnotes that go with the Federalist Papers, you're really fundamentally ignorant about your own profession. Or the, or the subject. You're just there's nothing wrong with your opinion, but you're just fundamentally ignorant about the subject that we're discussing.
See, and this is the thing about being a journalist.
I love that, that
I'm very rarely in a position where I can deliver a jab like that because I always am trying to get more out of whoever I'm talking to for the purpose of the article. So I'm like, oh, really? So that's genuinely what you think. Okay, I'll just write that down. And
that's hence the name, the Velvet Sledgehammer. Normally it's called the Velvet Dagger, but a dagger is kind of clean and kind of like very, you know.
And as Ed Kemper will tell you, it takes a long time to kill somebody with a dagger unless you get them in just the right spot.
Right. So. Sledgehammer, though, one good whack to an appropriate appendage and good night, Prince. All right, let me ask you this. Did you have a chance to watch any of General Mattis's interviews? He did two of them on CBS. Did you see any?
I did. I watched a good portion. I don't think that I saw it in its entirety, but I watched a good portion of it last night, actually, on the treadmill.
Which one? Did you watch the one where he's in the studio or where he's at his home?
At his hometown. I watched the one where he's in his hometown.
What'd you think?
I got to tell you, I love this guy. But I think that he's been getting a tough break in the media, in certain spheres of the media as of late. And it's partially our fault. And when I say our fault, I mean Marines like me who love James Mattis. Right. We build Mattis up to be something that's bigger than a guy. Right. When the truth is that he's a guy, you know, and that's one of the things I really liked about the interview that I saw was I really liked him talking about, his genuine belief in the probable reality that the Obama administration had lost faith in his leadership. You know, for most people, that would be a form of failure that you wouldn't be willing to discuss in such a high-profile environment, right? I certainly wouldn't want to go on CBS and talk about my highest-profile embarrassments, right? But Mattis did it without making it seem like he was even struggling with it. You know, he was just like, yeah, you know, as far as I was concerned, it was a failure, and it seemed like the Obama administration considered me a failure, and I was absolutely certain that my career in service to my nation was over at that point. And I loved the humility that I saw demonstrated there, and I really loved that even though the guy clearly has a lot of contempt for Donald Trump, but he's like, no, I'm not going to just sit here and take jabs at a sitting president because our political environment is so poisonous that it doesn't do anybody any good. And the more I see of Mattis, I already ordered his book. The more I see of Mattis during this kind of press tour for the book, the more I like of him. But the more I'm certain that this is not a precursor to any political career, I think that Mattis is happy to kind of lead a quieter life from this point forward. I think there's a lot of truth when he said that being the president's like a 5-year prison sentence. You know, but what did you think?
You know, I had a chance to, you know, work for him very closely, and he combines two things. One is this, he's the smartest guy in the room, right? And in most of the rooms he's in. And, you know, Dunford, you know, same. Kelly, same, right? So, I mean, when you go into meetings with these guys, I mean, they're brilliant guys, right? And even when they ask questions, they know 90% of the answer. They're looking for a small data point, right, from you about that. He's always cognizant. And let me tell you, General Mattis is very politically astute and savvy.
I would agree. Watching, just like they said in the interview, watching him work a room, like at that bar, it reminded me of what my wife hates about me when I go places, because she says that she feels like she's married to the mayor, because I'm always networking, you know?
Right.
It comes naturally to him. It seems like it's not a second skin, it's his first one.
Well, no, especially, so you see him, if you take a look, and I'll post both links to the CBS interviews, one he does on the CBS News the magazine they do Sunday morning. What's it called? Good Morning?
Oh, could be. I try my best not to watch television.
Yeah, I mean, so it's the one where, like, Charles Kuralt started it, and he would, like, the show would begin, and it'd be like a camera, like, filming a brook in Montana with audio, and you would get 20 seconds of that. and it would be just this beautiful scene, and you'd like look at it and go, what the hell? Is this on TV? Like, what the hell did I do? Did I drop into Montana and I don't even know it? But that's what it is. And so it's with, and let me tell you, you've never seen anything like it. It's him in his home, right, that he's had in Eastern Washington where he grew up. There's pictures of him you'll see in the interview that I've never seen before, canoeing. And then he goes down, and it shows him in a bar talking to people that he's known probably his whole life.
And, you know, and you can hear them talking like, man, you got to run for president.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I will say my wife did write James Madison in this last presidential election. And she didn't tell me until after. And when she told me, I was like, you know, this is one of those times where I'm just really proud to be married to you.
Oh, really? Wonderful.
My wife loves James Mattis. James Mattis and Buzz Aldrin are the two guys other than me that she had a picture of on her desk back in her recruiting days.
Draw the linkage from James Mattis and Buzz Aldrin to Alex Hollings. That's an interesting. She's obviously got an issue where she can get from those two to you, yes?
Well, see, no, I don't think. I think she just settled. You know, I think when I was younger, I seemed really promising, and now, 15 years later, we're still poor, and she's a failure just like me. So, you know, she couldn't marry up. I didn't get us rich.
But I mean, but what you see with him is his public person, right? That he puts on. I mean, because he is, but
of course,
he believes though in the what's made our democracy what it is. And he, in both interviews, right, the interviewers try to take him into talking about the President of the United States, and he won't go there. And what he does is, I've seen him do a lot, which is he looks you straight in the face, and he tells you the truth, and it ends with a period. I do not believe, what did he say? I believe the people that serve in an administration owe the sitting president, right, enough respect that when they leave, they don't get out and write tell-alls and things like that. I believe in that. So I'm not in the business of critiquing this president that I serve. I wish things would have turned out different. I saw the writing on the wall. I didn't believe my advice was aligned with his positions, and therefore I resigned. And he talks about the same thing with the Obama administration. He was in favor of a much heavier-handed, right, kinetic response to the Iranians going
to Iran,
right, yeah, to blow up a restaurant and kill innocent people that would have been the largest terrorist attack on United States soil since September 11th in Washington, D.C., in order to kill the Saudi ambassador. The Obama administration, now think about this, the Obama administration thinks that they can play nice with Iran, and they're crafting
the same way they thought they could play nice with China.
Exactly, and they're crafting this deal in conjunction with Europeans, right? And Mattis is saying, no, right? We need to drop the shit hammer of the gods on them to know that if they ever contemplate this again, we will destroy something else significant to their world. And that's when he was, he asked if were you relieved? He said no. And, right. They accelerated the change of command, et cetera.
Yeah.
Right. So
now I remember this happening because I was in the Marine Corps. And at the time, a lot of us had our fingers crossed that Mattis was going to be the next commandant of the Marine Corps, you know, and there was a lot of us. Mattis was already a legendary figure in a very real way at that point, you know. And so then when it turned out that Mattis wasn't being selected as the next commandant of the Marine Corps, that was kind of my, because at the time I wasn't very media savvy. I wasn't really following the news. And that was the first time that I actually read about this stuff, was because I was like, well, why the hell not? You know? And then, you know, I read more about it and found out that, you know, he had conflicts with the Obama administration. And really, that's, you're not going to be the next commandant of the Marine Corps if you have a conflict with the sitting president.
Well, and let me ask. So here's my question about this, and I had this conversation with I can't remember who last week. Dude, I have to tell you, the next time I go do post-traumatic winning, you need to come to it.
I would love to. I genuinely would love to.
Because it's the coolest experience in the world. And when I started it, you know, this is the fourth year. I'm into the fourth year of interviewing people about this Marine culture that we live in, and then aftermath, what it is to come home. So I don't know that anybody else has ever done what I've done. The truth that has come out of that is incredibly important, because it's traumatic wisdom. And when you give traumatic wisdom to our culture that comes from our culture and you share that, I had two people in mind. One is a young person or an older person that's already in this blacked out room, and the blackness comes from trying to cope and live with trauma, and they just don't know, and they're struggling, and essentially they're fundamentally ignorant. The second person I had in my mind was somebody who's just loping through life who doesn't see the lightning bolt that's hurtling at them through space that is all of a sudden going to blow their world up. And I had two Marines on Thursday and Friday introduce, along with General Furness, post-traumatic warning. One was a Lance Corporal whose father committed suicide on the phone with him. His brother, his six-year best friend in school, hung himself because he was being abused at home, both sexually and then violently. His brother commits suicide after he joins the Marine Corps. He goes home and buries his brother, and then when he goes back to Camp Lejeune to go to work, he starts getting screenshots of conversations that his brother was having with the Marine's fiance, because the brother was having sex with her. And so, I mean, his world is just annihilated. I mean, and I don't even think annihilated is good.
Is the word for
right?
That, yeah.
He heard this in January, and it's changed his life. He now saves people. By his own account, he said, I probably saved 9 people from killing themselves, by my count. I then met at something completely separate, weren't talking about post-traumatic winning or anything, at the 2nd Marine Division Sergeant's Council that I sat in on Wednesday. Sergeant comes up to me afterward and said, it's really cool you're here. And we're talking about one of the leadership issues that came up at the discussion. And he said, I don't know. I know you don't need anybody to pump your tire, Mac. I got that from the class you give. But I was so pissed when I had to go, and let alone 2.5 to 3 hours. You got to be kidding me. I walked out. My friend looked at me and said, that's the best class I've ever sat through in my life. And I said, you know, I was very, you know, obviously very flattered, right? And he said, but that's not the end. And so that was in January. He said, in May, my father committed suicide. And I knew what to do for me, and I knew what to do for the people around me because of your class.
That's awesome. Now that, because like we were saying earlier, manifesting actual change in the world, right?
Right.
At the end of the day, that's all we can do. That should be our goal, right? Like, that's what I love about journalism, is that theoretically you can manifest change in a positive way in the real world by shining a light on things. And it's the same idea with what you're doing, is you're manifesting a positive change in the real world through sharing experiences, you know, through something that isn't physical, that isn't real. You're changing the physical world through thought, you know. That's awesome. That's the best thing. That is the highest achievement a human can really achieve, can accomplish.
How happy do you think I was when that shit came out of his mouth? My head almost exploded, right? I mean, honestly.
Well, can you think of a bigger deal?
No.
You know? Can you think of a better, more important thing to help someone through?
No. No, and he's telling me the story of his dad's suicide. He's reading me parts of the note that are on his phone. And we went to lunch the following day. And then, and he's just a great, he's a comm Marine. He was the 10th Marine Regiment's representative to the division commander's sergeant council. Now, let me tell you this. In an artillery regiment, it's a pretty fucking squared away sergeant, okay, that comes out of a comm unit that we're going to make our rep. And he is every bit of that. Right, I mean the Marines in there, they're studs, man. They're awesome young guys. They're awesome leaders, right? And so, but I mean, talk about a happy day when you know you have that experience, and I knew what to do, and now I preach the gospel. I help people with it, and you know, and play it forward there. So But here's my question. I don't know. I was having a discussion. I think general officers in the American military have to assume a greater Mattis-like stance because of, you know, the disaster in Iraq, right, was paved with leaders who said yes to things they knew were wrong. And so
we have a lot of historical precedent to that.
Well, and that's the fucking horrible part about it. So
we're not learning.
No, we are. And here's, so when I look at this equation, right, you have the politician, the elected politician, he or she, right, has varying degrees of understanding of this shit. They've never done it in their life. Now they're going to take the nation to war with the intention of, in phase four, what's left after we do this is going to be something that we think is important to achieve. Okay? Now, they may have varying degrees of understanding of all that, right? But the military leader, by virtue of a career spent studying that shit, understands it. That person is advised in the triangle by other political appointees and advisors, the Secretary of Defense and that kind of shit, right? Now, those people will normally be aligned with the president, and so to me, the only person that should speak the truth and has got to be willing to resign and hold a press conference the next day about the issue are your military leaders. I don't see anybody else who would do that. And if you look at Cheney, the vice president, Rumsfeld, the secretary of defense, right? Powell, when you read accounts of it, Powell did not want to go to war in Iraq and told him that, and ultimately went. He goes to testify at the CIA, and he forces Tenet to sit behind him so people will know this is coming from the fucking CIA, right? And they knew, from people that have told me, that there was no WMD. And the reason they knew that was because the inspectors coming back were telling them that, right? They would come back, they'd get on the phone, or they'd go down to the CIA, and they would download their shit, man. It ain't there. So my point is that, and the question is, what Mattis does is he gets sideways with the Obama administration, and he gets sideways with the Trump administration. And my opinion is we need more general officers because there isn't anybody else that will do that. But instead of resigning and not saying a word, in my opinion, what they owe the nation, right, what they owe the young people that are serving is to resign and then articulately state, you know, in the case of General Mattis in Iran, you know, hold some kind of media event or issue something in writing, which is what Mattis would do because he likes to do that, and that way he can't be misquoted.
And
say,
I think that he's aware of the fact that he's more articulate in the written word than he is speaking.
Right. And nobody can edit his shit, and so this is the statement. And articulately lay out, and he did it with Trump. He didn't do it with Obama. But I think it was even too general relative to Trump. I think it should have been more specific. And my reason for saying that is Somalia, Beirut, Iraq, the expansion of the ground war in Afghanistan, and then Vietnam, are all fool's errands, okay? And if the people that know won't tell the truth and push back against civilian control, which is absolute, but the truth has got to see the daylight, then the nation is fucked. And the world doesn't need a fucked United States. We are the greatest power on the planet, and we lead other nations. And they need us to be right, strong, and true. And that comes from dealing with the truth. And so, give me your thoughts on that.
So I agree with you, but I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. I think that you're totally right. I think that it would be really dangerous for James Mattis to have been the first guy to do this. And the reason I say that is because I think Mattis suffers from the same internal crisis that Neil Armstrong suffered from throughout most of his life post-Apollo 11. Which is this inherent understanding that I am not who I'm built up to be, right?
Yes.
Neil Armstrong shied away from the spotlight because he knew that he was just a human being. He was just a guy. And the idea of Neil Armstrong was so much bigger and so much more important to the country than that, that he knew that if he spent a lot of time in the limelight, people would start to notice the cracks. And he wouldn't be remembered as Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, so much anymore as remembered as Neil Armstrong, the guy who went through the terrible divorce, or Neil Armstrong, the guy who supported Donald Trump or supported Hillary Clinton, or Neil Armstrong, the this or the that. And he knew that it was most important to the country that he be Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, right? And now James Mattis, to a certain extent, I think also suffers from a similar thing where he knows that he's seen as a respected figure by both the right and the left, not by everyone on both sides,
right,
but from a lot of people on both sides.
Right.
He also knows that the legend of James Mattis can't ever be who he really is.
Right.
Right. So if he went too aggressive towards Donald Trump, at Donald Trump, I mean, we saw immediately following his resignation, we saw the Trump administration attacking Mattis immediately.
Right.
You know, I remember writing an op-ed at the time about how the Trump administration trotted out the exact same bullshit narratives about Mattis that the Democrats had used when Trump first nominated him for SecDef. They trotted out those exact same narratives to try to discredit Mattis as soon as he resigned because they wanted to offset any damage that he could do to the president's reputation, right? So if Mattis had gone with a sharper point, if Mattis had been...
Okay, let me define the sharper point, because I don't mean politically sharp. I mean...
Oh, no, that's what I mean.
You know what
I mean? Let's say in his resignation letter, he was more specific about where he felt Donald Trump was erring.
Right.
Right? Right. Even if Mattis worded it very diplomatically, even if Mattis was completely courteous and professional in the way that he did it, as we've seen with, like, his last op-ed that was in the Wall Street Journal, it's a section from his book, in that he doesn't directly address Trump at all. He does say a few things that were certainly inferring Trump, but that got blown out of proportion in headlines immediately, right? So Trump would in turn have to attack. And Mattis knows that if you dig real deep past the legend of James Mattis, you find the flaws and the errors of a very real human being. You know, when Mattis was...
Yeah, but do you think... I don't think he gives a shit about being seen as a mythical figure, though.
Oh, I don't think that he does either. I think that he understands and recognizes that what he would be trying to accomplish would immediately get washed away by the battle that...
See,
would
I don't think... I don't. And here's why I don't think it would. Because he would not join the fight, as he's done.
But he doesn't have to. He isn't joining the fight now, but he's still being used as a weapon.
Well, that's fine. But what happens when... All the clickbait writers and all the other, you know, I would say the 24-hour news cycle people get what they want out of it, right?
Yeah.
Because he deals in the truth, that issue would endure. It would endure in the halls of Congress. It would endure, you know, at the Brookings Institute.
I think that you're right, but I'm not sure that it would endure in the American public, you know, because if you could dig up, you know, him having an affair when he was 28, or you can dig up a time that he said something that could be construed as racist when he was 31, or if you can dig up something that he said to a female employee when he was a colonel, or if you can dig up enough of these stories where all of a sudden the narrative about Mattis becomes his troubled career, and the narrative about Mattis becomes his failings as the Secretary of Defense, even if they were fewer and further between than his successes, if the narrative becomes about Mattis's flaws, then so too does his point. His points now come from the flawed perspective of a troubled guy in the minds of many Americans. And this is the way our political discourse has become. America has two truths for every topic now. You have the truth that you can get from AOC's Twitter and the truth you can get for Trump's Twitter. And everyone picks one. Few people are all that concerned with which one's real.
Yeah, but,
and,
but
you're
here's
right,
what I would say.
I'm not saying that Mattis shouldn't be the catalyst that does this, but I think from the standpoint of the individual, strategically, it was a better move for Mattis to blunt his attacks.
Well,
you're right, though.
I don't disagree with you in terms of the reality of our media, but let me just tell you, I mean, look at, I made the case that last week that Cheney, Rumsfeld, they should be put on Devil's Island. And they have caused...
I think there's a reasonable argument to be made to support that.
That nobody has the right to unleash the death that they've unleashed to civilians, to innocent children, right? To the tunes of hundreds of thousands of people by what they unleashed on the planet. You don't have that right, let alone to write a fucking book and get paid millions of dollars for that and treat it as this is some kind of academic drill when part of the world has been destabilized. That's bled in, the Middle East has bled into Europe, and everybody's fucking dealing with your shit based on your fucking fantasy that you fucking knew. You fucking knew the intellectual basis was bullshit. And so to me, I look for who is going to tell the truth that, as to quote you, to stop us from doing this kind of stuff. And if the people that swear an oath to the nation that aren't politicians won't do it,
you're right.
Then I don't see, so in the triangle, I don't see anybody else. And I believe that they have to do that. Now, will that subject them to, you know, political hate and whatnot? Yes. Now, I know you got to go because you got to babysit. So.
Well, I mean, it's not babysitting, it's dadding.
Okay,
but, you know,
dads don't babysit. I got that
dads
lecture
don't
before.
Babysit, man.
Yeah, so I was getting the buzzer ready, right? I was getting the buzzer ready and to blow on ourselves, or at least myself. And so let me.
I got to tell you, man, I love coming on here every couple of weeks and talking to you about, like, just so that the people out there know, we had an email with show notes, and we didn't get to any of it. And I love it. This is exactly why I like coming here to talk to you.
Okay, that was the buzzer that was supposed to play a few seconds ago. But anyway, no. And again, the diversity of subject matter here, you won't find on most places. I got a message from somebody a little bit ago. Hold on, let me find it.
He's like, would you get Alex to shut up about God? That's not what we came here for.
No, it wasn't. It was, this is the craziest shit I've ever heard. Unbelievable. It was something like that.
Well, you know, if you put a couple of Marines in a smoke pit together, I think that it's very similar.
Well,
you know?
No, it's much more interesting. Let me tell you, we both know that. It's much more interesting.
There's a lot more vulgarity.
But there's just as much truth in all of that. Right, because it is a place where, right, the currency of the day is the truth, and so I never tire of it. But I wrestle with this idea of people telling the truth, and you know, you talk to people, and they tell you things about, you know, what went on in what sequence, and you know Colin Powell, you know. He flinched from his duty, I think. He did his duty to George Bush, but he didn't do his duty to the nation, a duty that he learned in Vietnam, right?
I wonder if that's why we never saw Colin Powell throw his hat in the political ring.
Oh,
let me tell you. That way too.
Get your secret Dakota ring out. Why do you think Dick Cheney doesn't appear in public? Why do you think Colin Powell doesn't appear in public? Why do you think Don Rumsfeld appears in public sparingly and Paul Wolfowitz hardly at all?
Well, because it's better for them when the public's not talking about them.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I if you were them, would you want to be in the public eye the way they are?
Shit, I'm me, and I don't want to be in the public eye. So I can only imagine.
All right. Here's an email. First of all, let me say this. The discussion this morning, pretty amazing. In that one would initially think it's absurd the way it's introduced, yet both of you have enough intellectual footnotes to footnote every position you've taken, which makes it thought-provoking and interesting. Mac, I didn't know you were such a liberal. Well,
I wouldn't consider you a liberal.
Yeah, I don't either.
I consider you a California conservative.
Alex tried to brand me as one, but I don't consider myself a liberal. No, my liberal interpretation of Catholicism. Hey, at the end of the day, your relationship with God is defined by you. I learned that.
Wife has a tattoo in Aramaic on her shoulder that says the kingdom of Christ is within you. That is very much her belief structure.
And so if you say, look, I can only, my beliefs can only be embodied by a single institution and I've got to take or leave everything that they sell me. If that's the way you do it, then that's fine. it's never been, or it wasn't my understanding. And let me tell you this. You can see that when my parents divorced, I mean, it rocked my world. I grew up in a happy little family. I would say a middle-class family when I was young. Lived in a small three-bedroom house with my mother and father and three sisters. My dad became successful, and our lives changed, and not one bit of it was for the better. Not one bit of it was for the better. And so I watched my family be destroyed, and it started when I was in high school. And it rocked my world. I didn't understand it, why God would put so much torment, why so many bad things were happening. You know, it was just awful. It was an awful existence relative to what I had experienced. And so I went looking for answers, and I didn't find them.
But I think for a lot of people, and I know we're going long, I got to go, but I think for a lot of people, those trying times are what define your faith, right? That's when some people find God, and that's when others lose him,
right?
You know, but
well, I agree.
But what I think, I mean, I try my best to, and this is what I mean when I say I try not to be offensive to any religions, because who knows which one's the right one. But my approach to religion is very much the Frank Sinatra approach. You know, I'm a fan of whatever can get you through your day, and whether that's Catholicism, Islam, Judaism, whether you're Protestant or you know, Satanists, actually, Satanists don't really believe in Satan so much as they don't really believe in religion. Whatever it is that makes you, that helps get you through your day, that helps you do good in the world, hey man, that's awesome. You know, I don't have any disrespect for anyone's belief structure. For all I know, yours is right and mine's wrong, you know? But I think Mac's approach, which is, I want to be well informed. I don't want to avoid things that would contradict my beliefs. I want to pursue them to see if I can find some truth there instead. I think that that's the way we should approach literally everything, religion, politics, any belief that you have, you should be willing to challenge. Because if you have a belief that can't withstand challenge, then it's not a very good belief. You know, and I guess maybe that's my parting shot.
There you have it. From the Nicene Creed to his parting shot. All right.
I'll do a little bit of self-serving plugs, though. Please make sure you check out my work. You can swing by alexhollings.com. You can find me on Facebook at Alex Hollings Writer and Twitter at AlexHollings52. I write for everybody. I've got an awesome article this week going up on Popular Mechanics about the history of the U-2 spy plane, which is really interesting. I really recommend you guys check that out. You can find my work on thenewsrep.com, loadoutroom.com, wearethemighty.com, Business Insider, Yahoo News. If you're on the internet, you can find my name somewhere. But, you know, stop by my social media and let me know what you think.
You can have more of what you heard this morning. Alex Hollings. All right, bud. Thanks for the visit.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I'll talk to you later.
There you have it. A third of the earth is covered by, two-thirds of the earth is covered by water. Alex Hollings. All over that remaining third. And he's fun to visit with. Good to be back after an awesome week. I get worried, though, honestly, with three-day weekends. Marines, too much time on their hands, away from their friends, the people that keep them straight, and so I worry about them. So, anyway, as I do with anybody who's struggling, when they get away from people and interacting with people and whatnot. Isolation, right? The two things that post-traumatic winning fights, ignorance and isolation. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. Entertaining show today. In the first hour, you're going to hear me talking about how cool my life is. How cool my life is. And it is. It is. I live a cool life. But some things that happened to me in North Carolina, you're going to hear other things that happened to me when I came home on Saturday. You know. And again, it's just this wonderful life I live. Yeah, it has to do with giving, the act of giving. Go figure, right? The other interesting thing that happens to me on a regular basis, people come up to me and saying, you're doing the Lord's work, which makes me really uncomfortable because I've never thought I've had too much in common with him, although I followed his career. And but the teachings of giving are certainly obvious. I know in Catholicism and in Judeo-Christian thought, as well as religions all over the world. So ultimately, giving beyond yourself, and that's what at the end of the day, post-traumatic winning is about. It's doing the best you can with yourself, and then giving of others. And in the giving part of it, which turns out is truly the key in the giving. And the transformation of others, you transform yourself. And it's a very cool part of my life now. And again, I never intended to do this in my life, which is interesting. I never... I never thought I would be... When I started Almond Radio, I never thought that, you know, I would be going around and speaking about this. And then... But the most gratifying thing is that it works. It's a message that comes from our culture. It's based in truth. And giving that traumatic wisdom to others, right? Sharing your experiences with them and so that they know that you struggle just like they do knocks down a wall and makes them listen. And if you say all the same thing but don't include your own, I don't think it's nearly as effective. When you... talk about your, I mean, for instance, if you could imagine seeing a Lance Corporal and a Sergeant start post-traumatic winning off, right? And, you know, people walk in expecting to, you know, whatever they expect. None of it's very good. Like, why am I here? What am I doing here? But now it has a little bit of a buzz that goes with it. No, this is good. This is different. So they come in at least intrigued. And then the first person they hear from is the Lance Corporal, whose father... committed suicide, whose uncle murdered his aunt, whose best friend in sixth grade hung himself, whose brother hung himself, and then he finds out later that his brother is having sex with his fiancée while he's at recruit training. Right? He stands up and talks, and it's jaw-dropping. Literally jaw-dropping. And then you have a sergeant that said, I came to this class and I was like you. I was pissed I had to be here. And then he says, but pay attention. Because this is good. And I didn't find that out really till how good it was until my father committed suicide in May. And I knew what to do because of this class. I knew what to do for me. I knew what to do for other people. I knew where to go to get information and to help. And so, I mean, come on. I mean, as Alex said, is there a cooler thing that you can do on the planet? I'm not sure there is. And you, every one of you listening right now to this, every one of you can do that. You just got to want to, right? Because it's all out there. Walmart, breaking news, just announced that they'll stop selling handgun ammunition. Interesting. All right, have a great day. Don't touch that dial, seriously. I mean, pretty cool couple hours of radio. And that's coming up next. Alex Hollings, our discussion about religion and then about I do believe, though, that the only people that will tell the truth when the chips are on the table are the uniformed members of the American military. They take an oath to the nation. I don't think politicians have it in them to tell the truth. And I think that's a sad reality. And if we're going to stop doing things like Beirut, if we're going to stop doing things like Somalia, if we're going to stop doing things like Vietnam, if we're going to stop doing things like Iraq, then somebody's got to step up and in a very articulate way that gets to the core of the issue and whether it will be in America's best interest at the end of the day. If we can get, can we legitimately get to where this president's trying to take us? Are the resources being applied? And those debates and that discussion has to happen. If it doesn't happen, it's just not a good thing. Right? Just not a good thing. So anyway, have a great day. On a Tuesday that feels a lot like Monday, All Marine Radio is over and out.